Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome back to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired, to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. A couple of weeks ago, you know, we talked about t-shirts in our main story. Well, this week we're going to cover the bottom half as we talk about pants. You don't want to miss out on that fun. And then I'm going to talk about just how powerful positive thoughts can be in this week's version of Dean's Thoughts. And joining me once again for those stories and much more is Run for God founder Mitchell Hollis.
So, Dean, 2 weeks ago on the podcast, I did a kind of a call to action and told everybody to, if they were going to teach a Run for God class or an upper running class this January, to pause the podcast and just say, hey, Siri, remind me to reach out to Mitchell about meeting to talk about teaching a class. And I even said on there, I said, I wonder if that will trigger people's Siri. Well, yesterday I was driving down the road, and if you know, if you've ever notice that if you're listening to a podcast and something interrupts it, like directions or a phone call or something, when the podcast starts back, it starts back 5 seconds or 10 seconds early from where it was interrupted, so you can kind of catch back up. So yesterday, I heard me say that, and my...
As you were listening to
as
it.
As I was listening to the podcast in my truck, I heard me say that. Well, my phone heard it too, and it said... reminder to call Mitchell has been put in your phone. And I thought, well, that's funny. You know, it actually heard my, and I guess it would only work for me because it was my voice.
Right.
My phone recognizes my voice. But what happened is when the podcast started back up, it started 5 seconds before and it did the whole thing over again. So before I figured out how to fix it, I had like 5 reminders to call Mitchell in my phone. It was like a death spiral or something. And I had to physically move the thing past that point to skip over it because it was just doing a repeat. I couldn't get out of it.
That is great.
And so if you've ever wondered if your voice can actually trigger Siri recorded, it can.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I got a good kick out of it. I had to call you right when it happened.
That's great fun. That is hilarious. I love it. That is, I just can't. That's one of those things where once you realize it, you're like, wow, that's just,
Yeah.
Well, our post of the week comes from Jim Stimson. He said, today was supposed to be a short, easy run after yesterday's tempo run, but I was feeling good. So I decided to swap Saturday's 12 miler with today's run. We have our Run for God group run on Saturday. Thank you, Lord, that I still get to run. Even managed to keep my average heart rate in zone 2. I like this post because it's kind of an improvisation thing, mm-hmm. right? Just, you know, he felt good, so let's switch some things up. And Jim, of course, Jim posts a lot.
Yeah.
You know, he's out there in Arizona and just a real good, inspirational guy. But I think he's showing us here that this is good. That you do have to be careful when you do that,
right?
Because he had just run hard the day before,
sure.
And so running long after running hard is not ideal. But if you feel good, it's okay to do. So
yeah, and it's always better to improvise and change things around rather than skip something. You know, I'm a schedule guy. I'm a regimen guy. I want it to go as planned. But so many times, if it's not going to go as planned, we'll just kind of throw up our hands mm-hmm. and say, phooey with it, and just skip it. Well, it's better to improvise. As long as you're not getting two hard things back to back, there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
You know, in fact, we say, like in the 5K challenge, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that's the way we suggest it. But we only suggest it that way to provide a routine. If you need to do Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday,
whatever.
There's 4 days to improvise there.
That's
the,
right.
The point is, get the workout in. Don't skip it. It's not the end of the world if you have to skip that day, but you can always get it in the next day or substitute like Jim did here with another day's workout.
Yeah, yeah. And it was he was smart, too, in this run, too. All the improvising's great, but he also made sure that he took it nice and easy. He mentioned he stayed in zone 2 because he knew he should and needed to, and so he was smart about it too. So
sure.
And then, of course, I always love when somebody says, "I get to run." Mm-hmm. I love the sentiment. Our run of the week comes from Belinda Daughtry, one of the Coolidge folks. She says, "Medal Monday is a little late, but worth the wait. Mount Rushmore half marathon in Keystone, South Dakota. Beautiful scenery with an uphill race for 7.5 to 8 miles, then downhill for most of the remainder. This is rated difficult in the vacation race series. The race was in the Black Hills National Forest and on Iron Mountain Road. So blessed to be part of Run for God in Coolidge First Baptist Church. Thankful for our team Coolidge and thankful for all who came out to cheer us on to the finish line. Thank you, Lord, for watching over all of us out there and back on the race course. Thank you for the pictures from some of our running buddies, especially those of Charles at the finish line. For some reason, Charles said, for the next race, I'm leaving my phone with him. Ha ha. He seems to think my time would greatly improve. have you ever been out there? Have you been to Mount Rushmore?
Oh, yeah. I've been to the Black Hills and, that whole area, Badlands and Mount Rushmore, it's Crazy beautiful. Horse. Oh, it was kind of a trip of a lifetime we took years ago out there and just kind of toured that whole area.
It's really cool. And it's cool to see the Coolidge folks, just they're all over the country.
Yeah, they're like a traveling caravan.
Yeah, they are. Pretty neat. But, man, that had to be a tough run because, they don't call them the Black Hills for nothing.
Yeah.
And if the first 7.5 to 8 miles is uphill, I mean, you're glad that the second half is downhill and it's not the other way around, but it's still, that's a
It's just one of those areas of the country where everywhere you turn, I mean, we don't do postcards much anymore, but everywhere you turn, it's like a postcard.
That's true.
It's a really cool area.
Yeah, it really is. I don't guess I've done a lot of these spectacular vacation destination type races. I want to go race. Mm-hmm. I don't really go. But now I guess a lot of the cross country races that we run in December, a lot of those are in cities or towns that are cool. This year it's in Tacoma, Washington. So it's kind of a neat travel place to go to. It's been in San Francisco. It's been in, where else has it been? It's been in Tallahassee a few times, and that's not a great travel destination place.
Yeah.
Although only an hour from there, you can go to the beach. So,
There's a race out in Jackson Hole that I would love to do one day. I think it's a half marathon or a marathon, but if you've ever been out there, there's a bike path that goes out of Jackson, and then it runs along probably a mile or two off of the Tetons and just parallels the Tetons for – I want to say it's like 16 or 17 miles.
And it's parallel with the road there, right?
Yeah. But the bike path is the size of a road.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, you can see it from the road.
Yeah. And I've ridden bikes on that before, but man, and a mile or two sounds like a long way from the Tetons, but they're so tall, it's almost like you can reach out and touch them.
Yes.
So,
Talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my kind of my retirement checklist is to start doing some of these things. That'd be pretty cool to have this vacation race series.
That would be cool.
Sounds like something she made up there.
Yeah. Maybe we need to do that as a run club thing at some point. Just have these.
That would be cool.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, our trivia question from last week, before I get to that, let me talk about the week before. Remember, we had this question about the president, who would be the president. And this was the winning entry, and so I just wanted to share it because I promised that I would. This comes from Rich Glass. Rich Glass was the one who won, and he said this. He said, "I think it's George W. Bush. He was apparently logging 7-minute miles on his runs while in the White House, which created challenges for the Secret Service." And he's the one that sent me. We talked about the Runner's World article. He's the one that sent me the link to the Runner's World article. So that's how I found the Runner's World article. And then he said, "A distant second would be Teddy Roosevelt, who was very active and not as plump as cartoonists depicted. And then Abe would probably complete the podium." So
George W. Bush was a fast guy then.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
It kind of reminds me, talking about the Secret Service, have you seen the movie Reagan yet?
I haven't.
It's a really good movie, yeah. But at the one of the things you never think about in there is he was a avid equestrian. I mean, he loved to ride horses on his ranch out in California, and it was a challenge because the Secret Service had to go with him. Yeah. Well, they didn't know how to ride horses.
They had to learn, didn't yeah. they?
So that's kind of a cool aspect of being a Secret Service agent is you got to learn new things
yeah.
every 4 years or 8 years when the new administration comes along.
So. Seems like that would be cool. Well, this week's question was, tell me who your favorite runner is and why they are your favorite. It could be anyone, but they have to have a running identity, not just someone you know who runs. Could be somebody who influenced you, or it could be a professional runner. It's kind of wide open. So this one kind of put me on the spot because it wasn't that long ago that I wrote Dean's thoughts that was called Ode to My Favorite Runner. And, of course, that was my dog, Flojo. Here are some of my other favorites, though. My favorite runner, professional runner, is probably Sebastian Coe. I loved watching him run. He was one of the, you know, this was in the golden age of milers. It was really competitive. And Sebastian Coe was shorter than everybody else there. He just looked like the underdog all the time. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't, but he looked like it. And he was also the world 800 meter world record holder for like 15 to 20 years before David Rudisha came along and broke it. And he was fun to watch run. I think my favorite, I haven't really thought about this, but I thought about it in relation to this question. Who's my favorite current runner? Mm-hmm. I think it's Jakob Ingebrigtsen. I know, but I really like watching him. I like to watch him run, first of all, and I like the way he goes about his craft. But I also like the fact that he is very confident, but when he gets beat, he doesn't make excuses. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't whine about it. Mm-hmm. You know, he says congratulations to whoever beat him. Now, he may come back and say something like, but I'm going to get it. I'll beat him next time, mm-hmm. but or whatever. But I don't know. I just like the way he goes about things. But I know he's not a lot of people's favorites.
Yeah.
Because he is cocky.
Yeah.
But I also like Grant Fisher. And I think I like Grant Fisher because he's so humble. You know, he is just one humble guy, but he's got a heck of a killer instinct when he gets on the track. I guess on the women's side, there's no question. There's absolutely, it's not even close. On the women's side, I love watching Femke Bol run. She's from the Netherlands. I know, you know, I like all these people that are over in Europe, but she races all the time. She's always smiling. She's always positive and upbeat. She almost seems like, you know, she just has to run. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just who she is. And so I love watching her. Now, I would love for Sydney McLaughlin-Roney to be my favorite runner. But she just doesn't run enough to get super excited about. So, anyway.
I don't know. I think my choice would be, I thought about this quite a bit, and the reasons why, and it's opposite, or it's for the reason you explained with Ingebrigtsen. But I like Meb and Kipchoge. Yeah. And not for the reasons you would think. I like Meb and I like Kipchoge because I think they're the type of people that if you saw them out at a restaurant, you would never know they're a runner.
Yep.
I think Ingebrigtsen, if you see him out, it's going to be all about, yeah, I'm that guy.
Yeah,
you
know? Probably, yeah.
I think Meb and Kipchoge, at least from what I can observe, they want to be kind of unassuming.
Yeah.
They want to do their talking, you know, in the race. And I don't know. I've seen some of the background, the history on Kipchoge where, you know, he runs that little facility. And is it – where is he from? Is he from Kenya? Is it Kenya?
Yes.
Where he's at? Mm-hmm. But they have this little – I say this little track club or running club. I mean, it's some of the best runners in the world. But they all do their own chores.
Yeah.
You know, they it's just such a low-key, unassuming lifestyle – That's attractive to me.
Yeah, I like it too.
You know, and they're great, incredible runners, but that's not what's at the top of my priority list with those guys. So I don't know.
I think that's great. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
I mean, I think if you met Meb at a restaurant, it would be a few hours before you figured out that he was a runner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and Meb's open about his faith too.
Yeah.
And I like that as well. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Well, probably the person that has inspired me the most in my running journey over the years, without a doubt, is Coach Westbrook. We've talked about him a number of times on here. You know, he loves running. And it's the ultimate, when we talk about modeling Jesus and trying to be like him, and you see people who do that well, and you just really admire those people, that's kind of the way Westbrook is about running. It's it's not anything that he does, or it's not the things that he says.
It's the way he lives
his
life.
It's just watching him just enjoy how much he enjoys it.
Yeah.
And it's infectious,
I think. He's another one that I think, you know, the man's ran for how many years straight? 50 years straight. I think you could meet him and become friends with him, and it could be, other than you just know that he runs all the time, it could be a long time before you learn that fact about him, that he's in all these record books for having this streak that's just kind of unparalleled, you know, really.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, kind of digressing a little bit, I had a buddy that I used to go to breakfast with quite a bit. There was a group of us used to go, a couple pastors, youth pastors, and I went to used to go to breakfast with this guy. I got to meet him and know him, and we went to breakfast for a couple years, and I knew his wife's name, and I knew it sounded familiar, but I just never put two and two together. The guy's name was Greg Sponberg, and so one day I was listening to the radio. I think it was K-Love. I was headed to breakfast, and they were talking about Nicole Sponberg on the radio, and I was like, that's Greg's wife. She's one of the founders of the group Selah. I had been going to breakfast with this guy for like 2 years, and you would never know. I mean, he never mentioned it. He talked about his wife, Nicole.
Yeah.
But just, and I love that character quality in people that, you know, I feel like Engelbretson, when he meets somebody, he's probably trying to figure out how he can get it in there that, hey, I'm this guy. So
maybe.
I'm throwing rocks that I probably shouldn't be throwing. But yeah, that's just a character quality. That's,
yeah, we're
going to
talk about gossip here in a little bit.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Okay.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back, and we're still looking for folks to start up classes in January, correct?
Absolutely. I've been talking to a lot of people, continuing to talk. We've got some webinars coming up. We've got webinars if you're a past coach. We've got webinars coming up if you're a Run Club member and you've never coached. We got webinars coming up for Upward churches, past Upward churches who have done Upward for years, but they've never done the running portion. So we've got a lot of different informational sessions coming up. So if you're interested in any of those, again, shoot an email to customerservice@runforgod.com. We'll get you all the dates and times for those. But yeah, we're making a lot of headway. The app is coming along. I think we're going to get our preview of it here in the next few days. So, yeah, it's exciting.
That's awesome. Well, you know, we talked about a guy here not too long ago who did something nobody else had ever done. He ran the length of Africa. It was 10,000 miles. His name was Russ Cook. He's also known as the hardest geezer. I guess that's kind of his handle. But there was recently a BBC reporter caught up with him and talked to him about, what are you going to do next, right? After raising $1 million or £1 million for charity and doing all the cool things he's done. He's written a book called Mind Over Miles. I think it's available for pre-order right now, although I'm not sure if it's only available in Great Britain. I wasn't real clear on that, but it's out there. But somebody suggested that he run from the South Pole to the North Pole, and that would be crazy. It would take him a marathon a day for over 2 years to do that. And this is crazy. If he did that, obviously there's not land from the South Pole to the North Pole. So there's a 600-mile passage called the Drake Passage that goes from Antarctica to the southern tip of South America that he would have to swim in order to cover this distance. 600 miles. And that particular sea is incredibly rough. Mm. It is a... Nobody's ever, as far as we know, nobody has ever swam that stretch of water before. There have been some people who have gone through it in some rowboats, but there's like 40-foot waves in this place. So anyway, he says he thinks he can do it. So I don't know if he's going to do it or not. What he would do, though, is
that's a marathon a day for 2 years plus 600 miles of rowing?
Or swimming.
Swimming.
Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah.
That's hardcore.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So he would start at the South Pole. He would cross Antarctica, which is tough enough. Mm-hmm. Then he would do the swim, which is the hardest part of the whole thing. And then he would get to South America, go all the way up South America, through Central America. He'd have to go through the Darien Gap, which is a relatively dangerous place to go through. Then he would go through North America. And finally, he would have to do it where he was going into the North Pole area when everything is frozen over so that he could run to the North Pole. It sounds like a piece of cake, doesn't
sure.
it?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we should probably start that tomorrow. I'm not big on following these kinds of things. If he does this, I may be following this one. Mm-hmm. Well, Jerry Snyder shared a story about T-shirts with us a few weeks ago. And this week, it's about pants. So, you know it's good if it's from Jerry. It's called Still Missing. Humor is merely tragedy standing on its head with its pants torn. That comes from Irving S. Cobb, author of I'm on My Way to the Shopping Mall. I'm going to buy a pair of pants. And whenever I buy pants, I'm reminded of a story I heard long ago about Rocky Marciano. September 23rd, 1952, Rocky became the world heavyweight boxing champion by knocking out Jersey Joe Walcott in the 13th round. It was not an easy task. Up until that 13th round, Rocky looked like the loser. Jersey Joe was ahead on points and had done a good job of battering the challenger. But Rocky had one quality that would not only win him the title, but enable him to retire undefeated several years later. That quality was tenacity. He just wouldn't quit. A sports writer would later say of Rocky that a building could fall on him and he would still be swinging at you. Needless to say, when Rocky won, there was a celebration in the ring, followed by another celebration in the locker room. But when it was time to go home, the new champion discovered that a souvenir hunter had stolen his pants. He was the toughest man in the world, and he had to go home in his underwear and a robe. Something is not right about that. With some help from some kind folks, here are my thoughts on the subject of pants. The first comes from Theodore Roosevelt, 26th President of the United States. He said, if you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you wouldn't sit for a month. This is all about taking responsibility for your actions. Don't blame the cat, Uncle Louie, or the weatherman. You are the captain of your ship, your life. Choose wisely what you'll do and say, and then stand tall. You may not always control what happens, but you're always in charge of your attitude. Now let's hear from the famous British statesman Winston Churchill. A lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to get its pants on. People are going to gossip. People will criticize you unfairly and wish you evil. But if you're living a life of integrity, you're still a winner. And here is our old friend Anonymous. He or she offered this insight. Show me a man with both feet on the ground and I'll show you a man who can't put on his pants. Pick up your feet. Get into action. If you have a dream or a goal, something you want to be, do, or have time to pursue, The time to begin is now. Well, I'm just about finished with this essay, but first, about those pants someone stole from Rocky Marciano. As far as I know, well over half a century after they were stolen, the crime is still unsolved. They're still missing. Please contact your local police if you have any information about this caper.
Jerry does it again.
Yeah. I can't believe those pants haven't shown up somewhere. I mean, if somebody stole them, I'm sure, you know, as a souvenir, you'd think somebody would have put them up for sale.
eBay or Craigslist or something by now.
Man, oh man. It's crazy. So I guess Jerry's next story, we've talked about T-shirts and pants. I guess the next one's about shoes. Mm. So, it's easy to do with running.
I
want to
say he's done shoes before.
He may
have. I think he has, yeah.
He may have. I like that quote about the 2 feet on the ground. You know, a lot of times, you know, we're standing there and all we got to do is get started.
Right.
And that's a good quote. I don't know that I ever heard that one before. I have heard the Teddy Roosevelt one before. The Teddy Roosevelt one was the most interesting one of the ones he had here, because if you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you wouldn't sit for a month. That is so well said and says so much in just one sentence, doesn't it?
What do you think it is about, I'm going to say people, but I'm going to say me and you too, that we had this posture. You hear it with people about salvation. I need to get my life in order before I do this. Or about running. I need to lose 30 pounds before I start doing this. Or a job. I need to make sure this and this is right before I make this. Why do we default to procrastination? Is it the fear of that, or is it that we feel like we're somehow less than? But it seems like that is always our go-to.
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody. I think some people are it's a fear of failure. I think some people just they like the easy road.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just depends on the person, don't you? That's kind of my first gut reaction to that question. But it's so today, it's worse than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Today, you know, that we want to blame other people for everything. And
sure.
I got to thinking about it and I thought, you know how, you know, that guy who's a college football fan and every time his team loses, whose fault is it?
Yeah.
It's the referee's fault.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what happens. It's always the referee's fault, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how we sound. That the way that guy sounds, that's the way we sound when we're making excuses for things, right? And I thought, I don't want to sound like that.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and it was a guy talking about he was trying to get a new job. And the first words out of his mouth, he was a truck driver, and he had gotten a ticket, which was making it hard for him to get a new truck driving job. And he said, I got this bogus ticket. And the guy, it was John Deloney. John Deloney just stopped, and he said, whoa, whoa, whoa. He said, you got a ticket. He said, own it. He said, that is so off-putting when you go in for an interview to say, I got this bogus ticket.
Yep.
Just say, I got a ticket. I made a mistake. Won't happen again. That is going to go much further toward getting a new job than saying, I got a bogus ticket. Because you're pointing fingers. And nobody likes that.
Yeah.
Even though we all do it.
And when you hear that, if you're interviewing him, if I'm interviewing him and I hear that, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to make excuses for not getting his job done, too.
It's a big X on the application right there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the criticism that we get is completely not fair, right? It's people say things about people or accuse people or whatever, and sometimes that happens where it's completely not fair. He mentions that in this story.
It's kind of like me talking about Engelbretson. You can go ahead and say it, Dean. I know what you're saying. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I shouldn't talk about Engelbretson because I don't know the guy. I know what I've seen. I know the posture, but I don't really know the guy. So I shouldn't make those kind. So I'm sorry, Engelbretson, if you're listening, which I know you're not, I'm sorry. I shouldn't talk. I'm just real. You stepped all over my toes this morning, Dean. But no, you're right. I mean, it's so many. So many things that we lob out there are completely unfounded, unbased, and unfair.
Well, and a lot of things lobbed against us are that way too. And as Christians, I think it's up to us to lead this path back towards, let's quit blaming everybody for everything, and let's just move on. Let's go to the next thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point.
One day everyone will stand before the judge of all the earth, and each one will give account of himself to God. That's 2 Corinthians 5:10.
And in that day, I'm adding my thoughts to it. In that day, there will be no excuses.
That's right.
There will be no bogus this or bogus that. It's not giving account of yourself based on what others did or said. It stops right there. We'll give an account of himself or herself to God. There will be no point. So we need to get ready for that. We need to practice now.
Yeah.
You know, taking responsibility for our actions, because we're going to have to give an account of these things one day.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why this came to my mind when I read this question. I was thinking about what that's going to look like. And I thought, this is not what it's going to look like, I'll get to my point here in a minute. But there's an episode from The Twilight Zone called The Obsolete Man. It stars Burgess Meredith. He was in, I think, 3 or 4 different Twilight Zones. But this is the opening narration. He says, "You walk into this room at your own risk because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It's simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the superstates that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace." This is Mr. Romney Wordsworth. In his last 48 hours on Earth, he's a citizen of the state, but will soon have to be eliminated because he's built out of flesh and because he has a mind. Mr. Romney Wordsworth, who will draw his last breaths in the Twilight Zone. And then the way that this goes on, it's the description in Wikipedia says, "In a future totalitarian state, Romney Wordsworth is put on trial for being obsolete. His professed occupation as a librarian is punishable by death, as the state has eliminated books. His faith in God is taken as further proof of obsolescence, as the atheist state claims to have proven God does not exist. Following a bitter exchange, the chancellor finds Wordsworth guilty and sentences him to death within 48 hours, allowing him to choose his method and exact time and place of execution." And the way this thing plays out is he says, "Here's what I want to do." And he basically sets up this situation where he's in this room. Nobody knows what's going on, but the chancellor is invited into the room and he tells him, "Here's what's going on. There's a bomb that's going to go off at midnight. And that's how I choose to die." And he kind of makes this chancellor kind of beg for his life, mm-hmm. right? And not only does he do that, but he pulls his Bible out and he starts reading the 23rd Psalm. And
this is all in the Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
I've never seen a Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm misinformed about what the Twilight Zone is, but it's kind of eerie when you read that.
It is.
And you look at it's kind of like... have you read the Screwtape Letters?
Yes.
C.S. Lewis? Mm-hmm. That book was written in the 40s.
Yeah.
And it's almost like we are living verbatim what is being written in that book today. And
there's several of them that. Atlas Shrugged and
1984
and Brave New World. And there's a lot of them that have been eerily accurate in a lot of ways. But anyway, I bring this episode up because... The main character here, Wordsworth, is so confident in who he is. It doesn't matter that the state, in this case, they're putting him to death. It's like the ultimate punishment for just being a God-following good mm-hmm. person. And he just sticks to it. And he's very calm about it. Mm-hmm. He never raises his voice. He just is like, this is just, it's who I am and what I'm going to do. And regardless of the fact that the Bible is not allowed to be read, he pulls that thing out anyway and starts reading it right in front of them mm-hmm. and says, this is right and this is true and this is good.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's who we have to be No matter what's coming at us from what side, whatever, it doesn't matter. We
stand
have to be
on what's right,
that
no matter
person.
The cost.
That's right. That's right. Yep. In the end, it says, the closing narration says, the chancellor, the late chancellor, was only partly correct. He was obsolete, but so is the state, the entity he worshipped. Any state, any entity, any ideology which fails to recognize the worth, the dignity, the rights of man, that state is obsolete. A case to be filed under M for mankind in the Twilight Zone. I love the Twilight Zone.
I've never seen one.
I've got them all. If you want to borrow them.
So you got them all indicates that it's on like a VHS or a DVD player.
I've got all the discs. Yeah.
Do you even have a DVD player anymore?
Yeah. I mean, I've got one I can hook up to my computer.
Yeah.
Proverbs 20:19 says, do not associate with a gossip. That's pretty direct.
Yeah.
You know, of all the sins in the world, though, this one doesn't. I mean, do I do it? Yeah, I think everybody does to an extent, but I'm not big on gossip at all.
Yeah, I'm not either. I don't like the idle chatter. That's one thing that, you know what I'll do sometimes when somebody comes up to me? Now, if it's somebody I trust and I know and I love and they come up and they say, hey, I need to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody, then I'll let that, because I trust them.
Yeah.
But when people come up and say, hey, can I tell you something without you telling anybody else? I'll say no. Because I don't want to be put in the position of knowing something that is wrong, because I know how I am. Yep. If it's wrong,
you're going to want to address it.
I want to address it. And so then if I say, oh, yeah, I won't tell anybody, so then I'm going to have to either live by what I told that person and bury something I think that is wrong, or I'm going to have to expose something that I think that is wrong and, you know, damage my word by saying I'll keep it a secret. So I'm pretty upfront with people when they talk like that. I'll just say I can't guarantee that.
Yeah.
And usually what do they do? They tell you anyway.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Well, you know, I used to be an HR manager, and from an HR manager standpoint, people would come to you and say that I want to tell you, but I don't want you to, you know, and it's like, whoa, stop right there. Mm-hmm. I cannot promise you that I'm not going to tell anybody. I won't do that.
Yeah.
And like you said, a lot of times they go ahead, but it's like, I want you to understand up front.
Sure.
I'm not telling you. I think that's a good habit to be in for sure. So, yeah, and gossip in general, it's not, if you're going for a run with a partner, it's not a good topic while you're running. Find another topic.
Yeah.
Matthew 6:33, delight yourself in the Lord and he shall give you the desires of your heart. I love the scripture, but it's one of those that we like the second half. He shall give you the desires of your heart, but the delight yourself in the Lord part is actually not as easy. It sounds easy. Delight sounds like such a light and airy word.
Well, but it's a circle. I mean, you got to really think about this verse. It's cause and effect. If you delight yourself in the Lord, so if you focus and you take joy in spending time with the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart. Well, guess what? The desires of your heart are going to change when you delight yourself in the Lord. So everything's going to come into line with his will, and he will give you the desires of your heart so long as they're in his will. So it's one of those chicken and the egg things. It's just a circle, but the best thing you can do is jump in that circle.
That's right.
You know, so many times we stand outside the circle and be like, whoa, 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 I want this. Well, you want this because you're not having a close walk with Christ.
Yeah.
And once you start having a close walk with Christ, then you don't want those things.
Yeah, that's very good. Question, do you have an accountability partner or group?
I do, yeah.
Yeah?
I've got a few guys that we hold each other accountable, yeah.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I think Run Club is a great group.
Yeah,
from a group standpoint,
sure. Yeah.
You know, it's really good. And I mean, we mostly hold each other accountable for running related things, but I think there's some other things going on there as well, mm-hmm. for sure.
You have to have those people in your life.
Yes.
And Run Club is great, but you've got to have, it needs to be a small group of people that you really trust that you can tell them anything, mm-hmm. what you're struggling with, because, you know, the devil wants nothing more than to keep us silent and keep us private.
Yeah.
Well, your life doesn't need to be private.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like baptism. It's kind of like salvation. It's a very personal thing, but it should not be private.
Yeah.
And so you got to have those people around you. But more important than having them around you, of having people around you that will tell you the truth, you've got to commit to listen to them.
Yeah.
And that's where it falls apart sometimes. We want people around us to give us other perspectives,
mm-hmm.
but we don't always like to listen to them. And you've got to be open to both.
Yeah. I'm drawn to people who don't think like I do.
Yeah.
Because I want that. I want some feedback. I want people to be critical of me because I want to hear it, because that makes me better.
Yeah.
And so I'm drawn to that.
I walked with a guy yesterday, 5 miles with a guy who he's one of those guys in my life. And I would say 70% of our walk, we were talking about things that we didn't really agree on.
Yeah.
But we've got such a close relationship where we can do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we high five at the end and we're still great friends. But man, today our world is just says, if you disagree, then you hate me. And that is so wrong. We've talked about this before on this podcast.
We have.
But yeah.
Well, I had a friend of mine who was posting some things on Facebook that were, he's a good Christian guy,
mm-hmm.
and he was posting some things that I thought didn't show the best side of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not gonna fuss at him in public, mm-hmm. on Facebook, but I sent him a message and just said, "Hey, let me tell you how this is coming across to me.
Yeah,
because it just doesn't sound like I think you think it sounds." Because
mm-hmm.
he thought he was coming from a compassionate side, mm-hmm. but it didn't sound that way to me, mm-hmm. because my views are different than his. And you know, he took that and he said, I appreciate you bringing that up. Mm-hmm. And to this day, this has been weeks, maybe a month ago, I haven't heard anything, mm-hmm. or seen anything that he's put up there that was back to that other thing. Matter of fact, he posted some things about, we need to all be able to talk to each other and, mm-hmm. and get along with each other, even when we don't agree.
Sure.
And so I hope that helped him. Mm-hmm. And I want him and others to do the same for me.
Mm-hmm.
When they see something that doesn't look like what it should be, then when I'm not producing the fruit that I should, I want somebody to tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not always easy to hear. I mean, I've had those cases where people have called me, and we've talked about them on here, where, man, I get mad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, going all the way back to H.R. Poe, and he said, don't let running become your God. Mm-hmm. I was mad at H.R. for several days.
Yeah.
Before I realized he did that out of love.
That's right.
And look what came as a result of it. But there's nothing wrong with getting upset. You know, that's just our nature, is to, oh, that hurt really bad. It stomped my toes. I've talked about how some of the greatest sermons my pastor preaches are the ones where I'm mad at him when I leave.
Yeah.
But you let that percolate and set in, and you realize, man, that was what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
Wasn't what I wanted to hear. It's what I needed.
And do that from a running standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Do it then too.
Yeah.
When you miss that run,
yeah,
be honest with yourself. Be critical of yourself, and it'll change the way you attack it next time.
Yeah, like good old Dean saying, you're going to hate yourself tomorrow if you quit this workout.
That's right.
You were right. It's been years ago now, and I still remember it.
How do you handle the situation when you find yourself in the company of gossips?
Walk away.
Yeah, I'm the same way. That's just a simple question to me. I don't want to participate in that. And mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And I think what helps me a little bit is I'm kind of socially awkward anyway. I am not the most social person in the world. I'm not a good small talker. So that it makes it easier for me, because I don't go that direction naturally. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people do it naturally. I don't have to worry about it. Last question. In what ways do you encourage a friend when they share their goals with you? Of course, my my encouragement is always in a, I like to get people fired up. I like to feel that adrenaline going, and that's kind of my way to do it, you know, is to try to do that. And I like to, you know, I try to get them excited, and I want to share in their excitement. I think that's fun to try to get somebody just pumped up, you know, it's, and maybe that's a coaching thing.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
I always try to bring them back to their why. Why did you originally say this?
Yeah.
You know,
because
it's easy to get them fired up when they hand you them, when they hand you their goals. But 2, 3, 4 weeks later, you know, when you kind of circle back around to them and you're like, hey, you know, how's it going? And they, well, it's always a good idea to remind them of the why, because the fired upness, it tends to dwindle.
It does. It does. But I also like it, like if you call me up and say, hey, I need to do a tempo run tomorrow and I feel like I'm going to struggle with it. Could you help me with it? Man, I'll be out there on the track running with you.
I don't call you for those anymore.
No. but I'd be there if you wanted me to.
I know you would. Absolutely.
And so that's fun. It's fun to do it, to participate and help physically with things and people's and goals that people have. We were at a grandson's soccer game the other day. And this is my problem with trying to encourage people. We were at this soccer game, and one of the referees, I knew her. But I didn't know where I knew her from.
Welcome to the club, Dean.
My brain. Oh, my goodness. It took me 30 minutes. 30 minutes into the game, I was like, oh, I know who she is now. And that's so frustrating.
You see her every day, but it's just a different atmosphere.
I just can't remember stuff.
Yeah.
I would love to be one of those people who checks up on people regularly. And sometimes I do, you know, when I can remember to.
Yeah.
But I'm bad about it. So
it is so hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually too. For pennies a day, Upward Sports Run for God Run Club can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join the Run for God Run Club and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to runforgod.com and sign up today.
I think I've shared something similar to this in the past, but I was really trying to kind of look at it more in a more formal way this past week. And this is a good kind of a good topic from a training coaching standpoint. I have this theory that I guess I could call it my theory of the limiting factor. Probably come up with a better title for it. But here's the way that it works is you take these different categories like endurance / strength balance, which is kind of our fitness level. And then you take heart rate, you take breathing, and you take your mental ability. And my theory is that everybody has a limiting factor. So let me give you an example. A couple of months ago, I was struggling with my breathing. Like the first thing that would get out of control for me was my breathing. And I couldn't really get to the point where my legs hurt a lot because I was breathing out of control and I would have to slow down for that. Well, that got better. Now it's my legs. My legs are the limiting factor now because my breathing stays under control when I'm running hard and it's really hard to keep pushing. And my feeling is that everybody has a limiting factor, and it can be any of these things. And the trick is, for me, and as a coach, I used to do this, when I found somebody was struggling to break through, it was, what is their limiting factor, and how do we improve that limiting factor? Because that's the thing that's holding them back. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. It seems pretty elementary.
Yeah.
I think for me, though, my thoughts looking back on coaching is that the problem is that limiting factor can change from day to day.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I look back at some of the young people that we've coached in the past. And, you know, we used to say, is it the legs or the lungs or the brain?
Yeah.
And your examples fall into those categories. You know, one day it may be the legs. You know, they're a little overtrained or something. Most days it was the brain.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, well, we can look back at this past week's training. We know that you're not overtrained, because that's where they would tend to go to, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I've just done too much. Or their parents would come in, they've done too much. No, they haven't. They haven't. Maybe they stayed up too late last night on their phone, but that's not anything to do with the training. So I think the tricky part is that's kind of fluid. Because just like, I mean, I've been running a little bit here lately, and just yesterday, the day my run 3 days ago, felt great. And then yesterday, my legs felt so heavy. And it was like, it wasn't because of the run 3 days ago, because it was an easy run. So what was it yesterday? It was my legs. Well, then some days it's like, I just don't even want to be out here. So it's my brain.
Yeah.
And then some days I feel like my heart rate jacks to 500 2 minutes into the run. So it's my lungs. So I don't know. Is that what you're getting at?
I am, except that I think everybody has a general, this is my wall, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, from day to day, your body can be different. You can be in a different mental state or whatever. But in general, right now, my limiting factor is my legs. That's mm-hmm. that's where it is. Now, there can be a day where, like today, I ran hard yesterday. If mm-hmm. I went out for a run today, my breathing might get out of control really fast right now, because, you know, I can feel it. But in general, it's my legs right mm-hmm. now. So the idea is to find that. And, you know, a couple of years ago, you remember when Catherine, one of my ladies, mm-hmm. she was struggling, and I knew where her problem was. Her problem was not in her legs. It was not in her breathing. It was not in her heart rate. It wasn't anything like that. It was upstairs. Mm-hmm. It was in her brain. And so I went through a lot of things. I finally had her talk to somebody who's a friend of mine mm-hmm. and to see if he could get through. Yeah. And he did, and it worked. But her limiting factor was in her mental thoughts about what she could or couldn't do. And I guess that's just all I'm trying to say.
Well, and I think the tricky part is, for some people, it's just pessimism in general. They're looking, when they show up to work to do a run, or they walk out the door to do a run, they're looking for the limiting factor. And sometimes it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's a good
point. My legs are going to hurt today. Therefore, your legs hurt that day. And that is a real thing.
It's, what a great segue right into my Dean's thoughts this week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's right along there. Good stuff. So it is time for Dean's thoughts, a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Have you ever had your thought patterns changed right in the middle of a run? Mm. This one's called Changing Your Thought Direction. Have you ever had one of those days when you're out running and your body feels like it's going to completely break down any minute? It is a relatively common occurrence, I'd say. I remember feeling that way one day when I was when it was time for a track workout. I debated with myself about whether I should even go to the track. I thought, maybe I'll feel better tomorrow. But when confronted with a situation like that, my experience tells me that thinking everything will be better tomorrow is like rolling the dice, or maybe just wishful thinking. I went out to the track. As I began my warm-up, sure enough, my legs felt as if they weighed twice their normal weight, and everything felt incredibly tight. Nevertheless, I began my warm-up. Surely everything would loosen up then. And my legs did loosen up a little. As I began my long workout, I continued to feel awful. It would not be a good day, but I would get through it. But then something happened unexpectedly. A group of people showed up to toss a football around on the infield of the track, and I happened to know one of them. Of course, I kept running as I exchanged pleasantries. A few laps later, as I rounded a turn, one of the guys said, "Man, I wish I could run like that." Suddenly, I realized that I was running much easier and looser. My next mile repeat was significantly faster than my goal pace, despite the fact that just a few minutes prior, I had been struggling to hit my pace. That's when something hit me. No, not a thrown football, but a thought about what I had been doing to myself. Nothing had changed about my body in those minutes. I wasn't able to magically remove all the miles I had accumulated over the past week that had me feeling sluggish at the start of my workout. My legs didn't transform into younger, healthier legs in an instant. No, what had changed was my brain. I realized in that moment that I had been holding myself back. I had been limiting my thoughts to negative things. I had set a limit in my brain as to how good I was allowed to feel. And let's be clear, it was an artificial limit. Sure, the rush of dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, and oxytocin was what made the difference in this situation, but I had been suppressing the release of those chemicals in my body. When those guys showed up, I knew someone was watching me, and the praise I received while running had injected these chemicals into my body. So yes, there was a physical change, but it was all related to my brain and the way it was working. The truth is that we have some control over those things. While it might be hard to replicate a positive comment from someone I don't know, if I can think positively about what I'm doing, it can have the same effect, albeit perhaps to a lesser degree. The greatest marathoner of all time is Eliud Kipchoge. He is famous for forcing himself to smile when he begins to hurt as he is running. We can do that too. We can force ourselves to recognize positive thoughts and positive things going on in our body. What I was doing prior to those guys showing up was allowing my mind to get caught up in the negativity of my thoughts. It is important to recognize that my thoughts were true. I wasn't making up the fact that I felt sluggish. I'm not suggesting ignoring your feelings, but there were positive thoughts I could have had that I wasn't having. I could have been thankful that I was healthy enough to go to the track. I could be thankful that I have a track to go to. I could dwell on how awesome it is that God has enabled me to run nearly every day for over 13 years, even if I did miss that one day. And all of those positive thoughts could have overwhelmed those negative thoughts. Philippians 4:8 says, "And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise." This verse doesn't say ignore all the other things in your life. It simply indicates that we should be flooding our minds with all the positivity that we can muster. Because once you do that, the negative things will grow smaller and smaller. This applies to everything in our lives, including those times when we're struggling in some way with our running or walking. The next time you're thinking negatively about your upcoming run or walk, try turning your thoughts to being thankful for being healthy enough to exercise and see if that doesn't change your disposition. Better yet, fill your thoughts with all things God and watch everything seem rosier.
That's a great story, Dean. Yeah, you're right. That was a great segue into that.
Just what you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, how powerful is it? We've always talked about Cleveland Highway. You know, running on Cleveland Highway, it changes your mindset because you know there's people there that know you who are seeing you, even though you don't know who those people are because they're just driving by in cars. And you're right. Somebody walks out on the football field when you're out on the track, you're forced to change your perspective.
Yeah.
You know, albeit the motivation behind it may be somewhat vain, you know, because, well, I don't want those people to see me struggling. Therefore, your mind shift changes and therefore you don't really struggle.
Yeah, it works. Definitely works. I saw a good example of this this past weekend in my Sunday school class. One of the ladies in there, she's about to have some surgery, and she was on a liquid diet for like five or seven days for a long time, and she was hungry, and she kept talking about how hungry she was and how she was trying to convince herself not to be hungry. Well, I told her, I said, you shouldn't be trying to convince yourself you're not hungry because you are hungry. Mm-hmm. Don't lie to yourself, but
quit talking about it.
I told her, I said, here's what you need to do. Instead, fill your mind with, you're a strong person, and you are. And you're tough enough to handle being hungry. You don't have to let that control you. And I did. And she kind of looked at me and she was like, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
And she, you know, it kind of changed her disposition because she hadn't thought about that. But that was a good example of, we get, again, I said in there, we can't lie to ourselves. Because if we lie to ourselves, we know we're lying to ourselves. That doesn't work. But you can crowd out the negative thoughts with mm-hmm. something positive, right? And I think it applies in both the macro and the micro. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes our struggle is just getting out the door to go mm-hmm. and get started and take that first step. And we look at a training plan and it looks overwhelming and we think, I'll never be able to do all that. And that's kind of the macro. Mm-hmm. But then we have the micro, which is while you're in the middle of a run, you're in the middle of a workout and everything hurts and it's hard and you don't know if you can do another repeat. And that's the micro time to fill your head with some positive thoughts. I've done this before, or mm-hmm. whatever it takes. But there's so many different ways that we can look at both the micro and the macro and fill our heads with something positive. And it's different for everybody, mm-hmm. right? That's the thing, is there's no magic formula that says think about X.
Yeah, you got to find what works for you.
Yeah, yeah. And for you, it may be something it could be family related. It mm-hmm. could be very, very personal.
Sure.
Or it could be something general, mm-hmm. but it could be a lot of different things.
Good word, Dean.
In a lot of cases, you kind of got, like Eliud Kipchoge, you know, the whole smiling thing.
Yeah.
It's a fact that when we smile, when sure. we run, physically our body does better. And sometimes you have to fake it till you make it. But it's happened. It happens all the time. I was actually at the ballpark for a grandchild soccer game, mm-hmm. and they happened to be running at Edwards Park. Mm-hmm. They were running a cross country race, and so of course they had just started the boys race when I got there. Well, I was like, we got a few minutes before the soccer game starts. I'm going to watch this race. Well, I saw Jack Gallagly. Mm-hmm. And he came by, he was in about 12th place, a little past the first mile mark. And he looked good. But, you know, I was kind of cheering for him. Well, he didn't expect me to be there, mm-hmm. right? But he saw me on the sideline cheering for him. Well, a little while later in the race, they're coming down there in the last half mile of the race, and they're coming down that big hill. Well, I'm standing way off. I couldn't see up close. I'm standing way off. And so as I'm watching folks come over the hill, I'm looking for Jack to see where he's at. And I started looking at about sixth place because I thought he could have moved up a little bit, but I missed him. Hmm. I was like, how did I miss him? And I kept looking and I never saw him. And I thought, man, I hope he didn't have to drop out or something. Mm-hmm. Well, I got home and I looked at the results. He finished third in the race. And I thought, I wondered... And mm-hmm. I'm not giving myself credit or patting myself on the back or anything, but it made me wonder, sure. did he hear his name mm-hmm. in an unexpected way during the race? And that just kind of boosted his mood.
Yeah.
That's the power of a positive thought or a positive interaction.
Sure.
That it's very possible that the reason why he had such a good race, because I think in the previous races, he had finished like in the 8 to 10 range in those races. Mm-hmm. And you know, those league races, they're all the same people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he had a really good day that day. I hope that's the way it is. I hope that's what did it. But anyway, bottom line, you control your thoughts.
Amen.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share running and walking tips each day, as well as encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
Every week I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. And this week, this is good for this time of year. It is a uniter. You know, it's the political season, and we see so many people won't even try to talk with a person they don't agree with right now. But probably not if they're a runner. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, runners just tend to get along no matter what their thoughts or feelings are. And I think maybe it's because we can all rally around the fact that we're runners and we have this common thing. It's kind of a no judgment zone. You know, a lot of gyms now, they have a sign that says no judgment zone.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of in general the way running is, right? We also, for us, have this common thing of Christian identity as well, mm-hmm. and that makes a big difference. And it's a good place to start a conversation, whether the person you're running with is a believer or not. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to have the conversation go.
Sure.
Well, I like this story from Canadian Trail Running Magazine. By the way, I think the Canadian publications are better than Runner's World. Just my opinion, but that's this story says it's about this guy named Lee Alonzo Murphy. He's a Canadian runner from Nova Scotia. He's a trail runner. He's pretty elite at it. I think he's on their national team. But anyway, he ran for 700 days in a row. One of the things that made that unique, though, is not that he just ran 700 days in a row, but he ran at least 10K 700 days in a row. And he says he learned a lot. And he said there were three main takeaways based on everything that he went through during those 700 days. Now, see if you can hear anything here that you've heard before. First takeaway, consistency equals strength. Quote, consistency equals strength, not just physically, but also mentally, unquote. Murphy explains, his streak isn't just about logging miles, it's about showing up no matter what. He credits this consistency with not only keeping him injury-free for more than 700 days, but also helping him develop the mental toughness to tackle life's challenges. Whether it's dealing with shin splints or life's curveballs, Lee finds strength in the habit of daily running. Quote, I can lean on it when life throws a wrench into my plans, he says. Number two, find your passion and then go all in. Before running, Murphy struggled with substance abuse, but after getting sober 12 years ago, he found a new obsession, running. Now I'm a daily runner with a similar strategy for a successful life, he shares. This shift to a positive outlet not only transformed his physical fitness, but also brought fulfillment and purpose. He likens his ultras to frequent benders where he gets to push his limits and experience new highs. And then number three, Murphy admits that some days are harder than others. I'll sit in the porch and stare at my shoes, but eventually I'll get out and be glad I did every time. It's this dedication that has led to remarkable physical, mental, and emotional fitness. For Murphy, the rewards go beyond just crossing the finish lines. Running has become his way of staying grounded, healthy, and ready to take on whatever life throws his way. Hmm. Does any of that sound familiar?
Consistency over time equals big gains.
Yeah.
In whatever you're doing.
Yep. And positive attitude makes a difference. And doing hard things is good for us.
Yeah.
And makes a difference in other parts of our lives. You know, he could have saved all this time of doing all these runs. He could have just asked us. Yeah. We could have told him. Our trivia question for this is a good one. Usain Bolt is the fastest man who has ever lived. His 9.58 100-meter performance in 2009 is still the world record. He survived the 2018 Olympics in Beijing by eating a very specific type of food while he was there. As a matter of fact, he is on record saying he ate 1,000 of them. What was it he ate?
He ate 1,000 of them while in Beijing?
Yes. During the time he was there for the Olympics.
Hmm.
Yep. And if you know the answer to that, you can send it to dean@runforgod.com. Now, you have to be a member, but if you're a Run Club member, you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. So send that in. And our motivational thought of the week is from Charles Swindoll, one of my favorite quotes of all time. He says, life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we react to it.
Man, isn't that true?
Man, it is. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And don't make excuses. All right. That's 238 podcasts. Like, share, do all those things. Let people know about the podcast. And let's get more people listening. Let's share Jesus with more people.
Continue to think about teaching a class this January. January 13th is when we're all kicking off. We want you to join us.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.